Mr. Barbara Kempfer, Chair. We're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order of November 13th, 2024, for the Arizona State Board of Podiatry Examiners at 8:02 a.m. Roll call has basically been completed by Ms. Broaddus. We just need clarification that we do have quorum.
Yes, we have Dr. Campbell, Dr. Foreman, and Ms. Broman. I do not believe that Ms. Johnson Gray has joined.
Thank you. All righty. Does anybody have any declaration of conflict of interest of any agenda item today? Hearing none, we will move on to number four, which is the review, discussion of possible action on board meeting minutes. We have is September 11th of 2024 for the general session board meeting minutes. You might recall that there was no meeting in October, so that's why we only have the September minutes to review. Does anyone have any additions or corrections to those minutes to offer at this time? Alrighty, hearing none, then I will make a motion to accept the general session board meeting minutes as written. Do I have a second?
Second. Thank you.
Is that Tawanda? Did you just come in?
I did.
Ms. Johnson Gray. Okay, thank you.
And present.
Okay, thank you so much. I thought that we should recognize your voice. Alrighty. So it's been moved and seconded to accept the general session board meeting minutes of September 11, 2024 as written. Is there any discussion on that motion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any nays? Motion passes. Thank you. Alrighty, let's move on here to five, which are our items for board review, discussion, and possible action. Subheading A is the investigation file. So we're going to begin with complaint 22-13-B, which is for Dr. Spencer Neiman. Dr. Arthur Tallis is the investigator on the case, and this case is, there is no complaint other than that the board is the complaint that this, there was a malpractice action taken here, and this was disclosed on Dr. Neiman's application renewal for the year 2022. So we'll ask Dr. Tallis for his report.
Good morning. This is an investigative report that was initiated by the state board. Dr. Spencer Neiman submitted his 2022 license renewal application to the board on June 12, 2022. When the board reviewed his complaint, or his application, it was noted that question 5A, have you ever been named as a defendant in a medical malpractice matter during the 12 months before the date of the renewal application was checked? Yes. The board initiated a complaint, 22-13-B, due to this matter, and the board complaint was tabled until after the malpractice case was settled. The case was filed on May 16, 2019. It was assigned the case number CV2019-09502, and it was settled on June 13, 2024. The case was settled by Dr. Spencer Neiman's malpractice carrier, which was Preferred Professional Insurance Company. The settlement was based on two separate decisions. Number one, alleged lack of informed consent of the left ankle and left subtalar joint fusion resulting in additional surgery and pain. Number two, the insurance carrier decided to settle all claims as a matter of cost of defense. It was determined that the case would take excessive amount of money to defend Dr. Spencer Neiman. The insurer decided to save the cost of a two-week trial in Phoenix with expensive travel and testimony.
Dr. Tallis, I apologize. This is the Attorney General's name, Ms. Monahan. I don't think it's necessary to go into the specifics of the malpractice settlement itself.
Okay. I will drop down to records review. There was 23 different records that were reviewed in this case, and I'll just go down to the bottom. Patient J.S. was initially seen by Dr. Spencer Neiman on 3/27/2017. Prior to being seen by Dr. Spencer Neiman, J.S. was seen by Dr. Lorene Cota on 3/13/2017. Dr. Lorene Cota's examination of J.S.'s left foot, she reported that J.S. had semi-reducible hamartosis and severe pes cavus. She was negative 10 degrees of her left ankle joint dorsiflexion. She had pain with palpation to her plantar fascia and forefoot. With gait, she had left foot drag. Patient J.S. was told she would need extensive reconstructive left foot surgery, and J.S. was in agreement. J.S. was referred to Dr. Lorene Cota for surgical intervention. Dr. Spencer Neiman initially examination was performed on 3/27/2017. He performed a lower extremity examination to determine that J.S. active problems were cerebral palsy congenital, cerebral palsy hemiplegic with spasticity, and contracture of her ankle and joint instability of her ankle. J.S. did report to Dr. Spencer Neiman that she has worn braces and wants to have her left foot to function like her right foot. A lower extremity examination, physical examination was performed by Dr. Spencer Neiman, and it was shown that the vascular, neurological, and dermatological examinations were all within normal limits. A musculoskeletal examination did reveal that the left lower extremity had a foot drop and instability of the rear foot and very contracted. Extension contractures at the metatarsal phalangeal joints of the first as well. Dr. Spencer Neiman did take x-rays of JS's feet. He stated that he reviewed the radiographs in detail. He stated that he did show the radiographs and spent time discussing the surgical options for the pain and deformity. Dr. Spencer Neiman also stated that he stressed the need to try conservative options prior to surgery. J.S. reported that she has tried braces and shoe insoles, shoe changes, and limited daily activity and changed medication. He did advise J.S. of risks and complications in a postoperative plan. Dr. Spencer Neiman did report that the patient would like to proceed and that he agrees with the plan, and he did proceed with surgical planning. Dr. Spencer Neiman next saw J.S. for a preoperative visit and discussion on 5/9/2017, approximately 6 months after the initial office visit. The subjective findings were carried forward from J.S.'s initial office visit of 3/27/17. J.S. acne problems list was also carried forward from the initial office visit. Dr. Spencer Neiman's plan at this visit was that he reviewed radiographs with J.S. in detail and advised the pathology noted and correlated the clinical findings. He did state that he did advise J.S. of the risks and complications and discussed the postoperative plan. He advised J.S. of the advantages, disadvantages, risks, and benefits of the surgical intervention. Dr. Spencer Neiman did state that all questions that J.S. had were answered pertaining to the anticipated procedure. The patient J.S. then wishes to proceed with the surgery. Dr. Spencer Neiman did perform on J.S.'s left lower extremity on 5/19/2017 at Banner Desert Medical Center. Prior to surgery, a consent to operate form was signed by J.S. in the preoperative holding area. All procedures that J.S. consented for were performed without complications. J.S. was admitted to Banner Desert Medical Center for postoperative pain management. She was under the care of Dr. Raman Jat, M.D., and was discharged from Desert Banner Medical Center when stable on 5/22/2017. On 5/30/2017, J.S. was seen for her first postoperative visit. J.S. did deny any chills, fever, vomiting, nausea, or shortness of breath. Dr. Spencer Neiman performed a dressing change to the left lower extremity after determining no clinical signs of infection and all incisions were healing normally. his notes did state that his discussed the postoperative course in regards to cleaning and care of the incision. Dr. Neiman did tell the patient to keep weight bearing to a minimum in a walking boot instead of walking boot. Dr. Spencer Neiman next saw JS on 6-6-2017 for continued postoperative management. JS denied any chills, fever, vomiting, nausea, or shortness of breath. Dr. Spencer Neiman stated that there was no clinical signs of infection, no drainage, or cellulitis. On this service date, all sutures were removed. Radiographs were also taken of JS's left extremity. Dr. Spencer Neiman did determine that the alignment showed a good, stable postoperative change and alignment was stable. Dr. Spencer Neiman next saw the patient, JS, on 6-26-2017. At this visit, it was reported by Dr. Spencer Neiman that the pain and swelling were stable and that JS had been compliant with and weight-bearing status. Dr. Spencer Neiman did take radiographs and reported as stable postoperative changes, hardware, and alignment are stable. Dr. Spencer Neiman also stated JS started JS on a weight-bearing status boot time. JS was also to start range of motion exercise with home physical therapy. Dr. Spencer Neiman did see patient JS for postoperative visit on 7-21-17 and stated that her started her on physical therapy for her upper extremity only due to JS stating that she is weak. All other findings are carried forward. Dr. Spencer Neiman saw JS on 8-7-2017 and discussed pain management with her. All other findings are carried forward. Dr. Spencer Neiman next saw JS on 9-11-2017. On this visit, he reported that she is doing better and recommended prescription functional orthotics and she was cast for them. His plan was also to start physical therapy. All their findings are carried forward. Dr. Spencer Neiman next saw JS on 9-25-2017. On this visit, he did dispense the functional orthotics to JS and she was to continue physical therapy. Dr. Spencer Neiman next saw JS on 11-6-2017. His notes showed that JS was struggling with pain, shooting pain from the back down. He also reported that JS was very emotional on this visit. Dr. Spencer Neiman's new diagnosis that this visit was peripheral neuropathy. He did send her for a lumbar spine MRI and a CT of her left lower extremity to further evaluate the pain of her foot and ankle. Dr. Spencer Neiman next saw JS presented Dr. Spencer Neiman's office with her mother and father. His notes report that JS had a chief complaint of numbness and burning to the left arm and down to the left leg. His notes stated no hardware pain. He did carry through the diagnosis of peripheral neuropathy. He also reviewed the MRI findings that JS performed on 11-22-2017 at Simon Med. The studies performed at Simon Med were 1, a CT of the lower extremity without contrast and an MRI of the lumbar spine without contrast. Dr. Spencer Neiman next saw JS on 1-8-2018. On this visit, his note stated that she had a new chief complaint. JB complained of pain and soreness in her left foot and ankle. His notes also stated that JS complained of pain and soreness in her left foot and ankle. His notes also stated that JS stated that Steve heard a pop. At this time, JS was still in pain management program. Dr. Spencer Neiman did report in his findings that the left leg and ankle were stable. He also took radiographs and reported that no acute changes noted stable ankle. At this visit of 1-8-2018, Dr. Spencer Neiman did discuss surgical options and again recommended conservative care. However, Dr. Spencer Neiman's notes does state that he will schedule a removal of the dynamic screw to see if that helps. Dr. Spencer Neiman next saw JS on 1/22/2018. His diagnosis today was complications due to orthopedic device implant or graft, and number two, peripheral neuropathy. Dr. Spencer Neiman's chart did state that this was a surgical discussion visit. Dr. Spencer Neiman carried forward the new onset of pain and soreness to foot and ankle. She heard a pop. This was first documented on 1/8/2018 per chart note. His note also stated that he spent some time discussing the surgical options prior to surgery. However, no significant findings were documented or described, but the diagnosis included complications due to a device, implant, or graft. This was the last visit of Dr. Spencer Neiman's office as the patient J.S. transferred care. My conclusions are, after review of the medical records supplied, is my opinion Dr. Spencer Neiman's treatment and care was within the standard of care. The procedure performed on J.S. on 5/19/2017's left foot and ankle arthrodesis were performed correctly. The complications that J.S. experienced are known with these type of procedures. As far as lack of informed consent, there were chart notes on 3/27/17 and 5/9/2017 stating that Dr. Spencer Neiman did advise J.S. of the advantages, disadvantages, risks, and benefits of the procedure. He also reviewed the conservative care failure with J.S. on 5/9/2017. Dr. Spencer Neiman also reported that he answered all questions asked pertaining to the anticipated procedures. The post-operative care per chart notes 5/30/17, 6/6/17, 6/26/17, 7/21/2017, 8/7/2017, 9/11/2017, 9/25/17, 11/6/17, and 12/11/17 showed appropriate care. Based on the CT findings, which showed the possible superior of the distal locking screw extended medially into the posterior subtalar articulation, he discusses the need for removal of the hardware. He again reviewed the surgery to remove the hardware in JS's, if JS's pains continued. Again, Spencer Neiman discussed all the risks and benefits. Prior to scheduling the hardware removal procedure, he ordered a follow-up CT at Simon Med, which was performed on 1/16/2018. Dr. Spencer Neiman based his findings on the CT finding that there was no reduction of JS's pain and he would proceed with removal of the hardware. The patient JS did not return and had her records transferred to Dr. Lewis Freed. The case CV 2019 was settled by Dr. Neiman's malpractice carry on 7/22/24 based on the allegations of failure to obtain consent and lack of informed consent resulting in additional surgery and pain. When reviewing the chart records supplied, I acknowledge the uncertainty. I had to focus on the facts in the medical records. The available information does clarify and eliminate assumption. It is my opinion that all risks and benefits, advantages, and disadvantages were seen in Dr. Spencer Neiman's medical records. I can only speculate what may have been discussed between Dr. Neiman and JS, but these would be just possibilities, not certainties. Dr. Spencer Neiman's medical records clearly support and reflect good clinical practice for a podiatric medical doctor. Dr. Spencer Neiman's discussion to proceed with surgical procedures documented well, performed appropriately, follow-up care was appropriate, and the chart notes are comprehensive. The records reviewed demonstrate adequate informed consent and the thoroughness in addressing JS's needs. Dr. Spencer Neiman exercised appropriate clinical judgment and provided care that meets the professional standards expected. It is also my opinion Dr. Neiman's malpractice carrier settled this case not based on the merits of the case, but to avoid the cost of defense. This is a common practice decision which allows the malpractice carrier to manage their risks and control expenses even if they believe that the case might be defendable. The case 22-13-V was reviewed for a possible violation of statute 32854-01, committing any conduct or practice that might be harmful or dangerous to the health of the patient. After review of the medical records, it is my opinion that there is no violation. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Teller. Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Tallis?
The only question I have is the part he did not read, the one concern. When should have Dr. Naiman reported this case on his license reapplication?
Okay, I did make an addendum to my report, and the malpractice case, that the CV 2019, was filed in Superior Court of Arizona by Matua Law, PLLC, on May 16, 2019. Dr. Spencer Naiman did not report this filed claim until his renewal application of 2022.
That was very complete. I have no other questions.
Thank you. Ms. Broman, do you have any questions for Dr. Tallis?
One question. The complaint was that the patient did not sign a consent form. There was no consent form. Was there a consent form?
It was
we went over everything that was done and all the dates. So was it signed?
It was signed in the hospital before he performed the surgery.
Okay, but nothing in his office?
Nothing in his office.
Thank you.
Ms. Gray, do you have any questions?
I do not.
Thank you. Okay, so Dr. Tallis, did you review the consent that was in the hospital chart?
No, I did not. I did not see it, but I saw in the chart and I was like, there was no consent form signed.
Because I know we've had this discussion in the past, again, about consents in office chart notes and obviously in the facility notes. And in reviewing all the materials that were presented for the expert witnesses for both parties, you know, there was a conflict there regarding this consent issue, whether it was appropriate just to go on what was in the hospital chart with nothing other than statements that were made in the medical records. So I know, I mean, this is again kind of a fine line. We've discussed this issue in other cases where, you know, what's the minimum standard. It's not what maybe you or I or other practitioners would do in their practice, but this is obviously was an allegation here that was part of the part of this complaint. So again, you know, I think it's just something that practitioners and are aware of, that, you know, there may be instances where that won't go your way by saying, oh, I did it, but it's not in my medical records in the office, but here it is, it's in my records from the hospital. So and let's see here. So one more time,
am I allowed to speak?
Just a minute, yes, you'll get your turn. Hang on. I didn't forget you. I just want to make sure that we can review our notes here. If there's anybody who has any other, I did have a question. Dr. Tallis, the patient had PT on the upper extremity. Was there who ordered that? Because Dr. Naiman shouldn't be ordering upper extremity PT. Did you see, was it from the primary person?
It wasn't recorded.
It wasn't recorded who did that? Okay, well, we can ask about that. Okay. Alrighty. Okay, so Dr. Naiman, it is your turn to say whatever, if you want to answer anything to what Dr. Tallis' report is, and then allow board members to ask questions. So please proceed.
I can look at my records, but I believe this was reported in a timely manner on my licensure. That's one statement. Another statement about informed consent. I think we've talked about this before. What we've talked about before has no pertaining to this case. But the procedure was performed at a facility. That's where the facility should be obtaining the informed consent, not in the office. If I do an ingrown in the office, I'm going to consent them for that ingrown in the office. This idea that consent was not done in the office is not a standard of care. And you harp on this idea that it should be done or other people should do or it's going to come back to bite me. I just don't think that's a standard of care procedure that is required in any form or fashion. The other point of this informed consent, it was not questioned about informed consent that there was not consent in the office. That was not the question. The informed consent was just her not feeling like she knew what was going to happen. Okay? So your statement, too, about that issue that was brought up about informed consent was not because there was not a consent signed in the office. Is that what you're making?
No.
Or just, do you want to clarify that?
No, what you're saying, and this is why we had this discussion, Dr. Niemann, is to, you know, what's written in the document from the court, you know, saying what the allegations are. That's why that had to be discussed, because they're saying lack of informed consent required,
okay.
So that you required additional surgery. That's all. And I know we've talked about this before, and
no,
I just mentioned it in that way. I'm not bringing it up to pound it into the ground here. It's just something that,
okay.
You know, we've talked obviously about before. So on the thing about timely.
I understood your, let me talk about consent first. I understood your statement to be because I didn't sign an informed consent in the office that this was also questioned within the documents.
Oh, no.
The alleged. Okay.
No.
If you want to go back to your record, that's kind of what I heard.
Okay, well. You know, again, like I said, I just wanted to reiterate that we had this discussion on many times before, and that it's just so everybody knows that we've talked about it before, and we're not going to go into great detail on this because, again, as you've just mentioned, that wasn't part of you're the one who went through, you know, the process with the legal system there, and so that's, you know, why we asked.
What happened before this case has no pertinence to this case, okay? What you said about informed consent was you feel personally that you should have a consent in the office. I feel strongly that the consent is done by the facility where the procedure is performed. That is the standard of care. Every time we talk about this, you're making this assumption or insinuation that it's not, okay? And you made your statement that it could come back to bite me.
Well, I've seen
what
it happen to
say is you're saying that there was an allegation of lack of informed consent, and that allegation pertains to me not obtaining a consent in the office, which is not true.
Well, that's not how I meant it to sound. What we were just and
okay.
One
okay.
question I have some
that's,
questions. So, did you when you say the facility does the consent? So you're not doing the actual consent of the patient at the facility. You're allowing the nursing staff to do the consent.
My notes clearly state that I clearly discussed with them all routine complications, expected outcomes, alternative benefits, pre and post-operative surgical care in the office.
Right.
I explain to them what they're going to be consented for. I order that the nurses consent to them for this.
Okay.
Okay. My preoperative orders. And the patient signs the consent, which clearly states that the doctor has explained everything to them in a detailed manner, in layman's terms, and that is the standard of care in any facility.
Okay, we're not going to.
And I don't see any question of that.
Okay. I'm not going to. Don't want to
stop this
here.
Idea.
Go ahead.
Well, you're still questioning. Questioning me about my informed consent.
Well, I just wanted to know if you do it there too at the hospital. Those are fair questions for me to ask.
Everybody, the facility would not allow that, Dr. Campbell.
They don't allow you to do the consent yourself in the facility?
No, the facility hasn't signed consent. That's my consent. I signed that consent as well.
Yes, you should, yeah. Okay. These are just things that we obviously had another board member who asked the question. So that's why I just kind of reiterated that this has been issues in the past. I did not say it was just you or any of that. So let's move on.
The question by the other board member was totally
appropriate. Excuse me. The record is getting muddled. We need to allow one person to talk at a time. The issue here is not whether there was informed consent. The issue is that for the second case in a row, the informed consent was not in the patient's Bible. What you just stated is incorrect. There is an informed consent from the facility in the patient file. I don't have custodial of those records from the hospital. Okay, I have a responsibility to my record. No, do I have a consent from my office? No, but the consent for any procedure was done within the facility, and those consents were in the record for both cases. Isn't that correct or not?
I believe that is not correct. Heather, can you confirm? I believe that Dr. Mew, you said it was the board's responsibility to request that from the surgical facility.
Who's speaking so I can understand?
This is the board's attorney. And you don't have to answer that question. I'm trying to clarify the issue because we're going back and forth here on something that is not an issue. Yeah. The issue here is that the board did not find that they had that surgical consent in the packet. If it's in the packet, not a big issue.
Okay, Dr. Talis just stated there was a consent. The question was presented that there was consent pertaining to this case.
Dr. Talis just testified that he did not see a consent, that he read in the chart file that he stated there was a consent. He never saw the actual consent.
Okay, we need to clarify what we're asking. Are we asking for consent from the office, or are we asking for consent for the procedure? The consent for the procedure, which was performed at the facility, is in the file in the patient's record. Okay? That has been provided for both cases.
It was not in our file.
Yeah, it was not in the file.
We did not have it in our packet.
And which file? Today's file?
Correct.
I'm going to pass this off to the board. Dr. Campbell, if you find it necessary to keep going down this route, you can do that.
No.
At this point, I'm going to hand it back to you.
No.
It's my understanding there was not a consent in the file for the surgery. That's what we're discussing.
Exactly. And so let's move. The only other question that we were trying to determine was timely reporting of the claim on renewal applications. And if there was a change in attorney or something, and because we have a date as to when it was filed, but we don't have a date as to when Dr. Neiman was actually served. And then if there was a change in attorney, that could change that if he did not have knowledge of the case against him until later on. That's why we're trying to, that's the only other question that we have.
Okay, that question wasn't presented to me in this complaint, and so I'm not quite prepared to answer that question.
Okay.
Well, I think it's very easy. Heather, can you confirm when you received the report for the malpractice matter?
Thank you. This is Heather Brada. So I received the NPDB report not too long ago, within the last few months. And I did go back and look, and it was not reported until 2022. But again, I don't know when Dr. Neiman was served. You know, if it was filed in the court in 2019, a change in attorneys, I wouldn't know when Dr. Neiman
Absolutely.
Was made aware of, you know, it going through the court process.
There was a change of attorney.
Okay. That could be where this hang-up is, and then the fact that Heather didn't get that in the National Practitioner Data Bank report until 22, then I'm going to assume...
Oh, I, excuse me, I apologize, Dr. Campbell. I received the NPDB report within the last couple of months.
Oh, and okay, so then it should, it's fine.
The only July 2nd.
Okay, so this that was
you only get that report if there's a settlement. There's not going to be any reporting as if there's a legal case in question right now.
Right,
that report is after the settlement.
Yeah, but if there's a change in attorney, that could have been why, you know, that Dr. Neiman didn't get the information and stuff. So then he would have been timely, correct? Board members,
Heather, have you looked back at my prior applications? Because I believe this was reported. This was reported way back when, and had been on hold for a long, long time. And then COVID happened; it got postponed for the longest time because courts weren't going to trials. And it got to a point where the plaintiff was getting worried about the whole case, and then the whole settlement issue didn't go through. And then finally, it was looking at as if like this would be too costly to bring in a bunch of specialists on both sides, and hence, like Dr. Taylor spoke of, this is the manner of which the malpractice carriers will do to reduce risk.
Madam Chair, board members, this is Heather Bradis again. I did go through Dr. Neiman's licensing file, and I did not see that this particular case was reported until his 2022 renewal.
Right, and that's what the complaint log says, 8/10/22 was the date that was received. So, with, like I said, with switching of attorneys and stuff, that I think, you know, he did it when he was supposed to. It was a timely indication of the malpractice claim against him. If anyone else has another opinion, please bring that to my attention.
Dr. Campbell, this is A.C. Monahan. I just did want to point out, too, that, you know, this was paid quite a while ago, so I understand the question of not reporting. I just want to point out that, you know, it was paid, you know, a year or two ago, I think, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And I believe Dr. Neiman has been participating in that process
with
the board.
Dr. Foreman or other board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Neiman?
I have no questions, and based upon this, I will make a motion to dismiss case 22-13-B because Dr. Neiman's treatment and care was in the standard of care.
We have a second.
I second. This is Board Member Johnson Gray.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson Gray. It's been moved and seconded to dismiss case 22-13-B, seeing no violation of state statutes. Is there any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. All right, next complaint is 24-12-C is Dr. Joshua Modlin. I don't believe Dr. Modlin is present on the call, and we do have the complainant is present. Her initials are AB. That's how we will refer to her, and she to refer to herself in that manner. And Dr. Saunders is the investigator on the case, and so we would ask him to give his report.
All right, good morning. Complaint 24-12-C. A summary here is that the AB, she alleges that Dr. Modlin caused unnecessarily pain, some emotional distress, anxiety regarding the treatment that he provided. There's also a separate allegation that during the patient care, she made an allegation that the doctor was on the influence of some type of drug at the time. I did interview her as well. AB is relating that when she presented to the clinic for her routine diabetic foot care for removal of the deep-seated corns calluses, she relates that she did make some small talk. They were talking about a concert of some sort. And then suddenly, during kind of mid-conversation, she says, Dr. Mullen just started immediately to trim her toenail. She realized that he removed her fifth toenail, starting out on one of the feet, starting with that fifth toenail. She clarifies that at no previous time or any other visit that she's been there, that the nails were debrided. No other provider she's seen, multiple at the office, ever trimmed her nails. She never consented for that. She was taken back by this procedure in the office. As Dr. removed the toenail, caused a lot of pain and anxiety. She ended up going to an urgent care facility that evening due to the pain and stress. As this procedure was happening, she confronted him mid-procedure, I guess, about the event. She was confused. She was having some anxiety, and she was fairly quiet during that, but it did have an effect on her. She realized that she ended up kind of stopping the visit at that point. She went up to the front office, still kind of confused, and discussed the events with the staff, eventually getting an office manager involved. And she goes on to describe to me that she believed that Dr. Mullen was making strange facial tics, the interaction was irregular, and that she associates that with someone that has been on drugs based on any previous experience. I'm sure of that. She relates that when she went to the front desk to discuss it, the staff also was kind of giving a reassurance or confirmation that they thought he was on drugs too. That's hearsay, that was her opinion. She did eventually speak with the office manager. She did speak with Dr. Neiman, who's also the office manager at the time. She did have this conversation with them. But she reports to me that she felt that she was dismissed. There was some yelling, and the meeting turned inappropriate. She ended up just leaving. She denied completion of the treatment on that visit. So I did read the response for Dr. Mullen that was presented to the board. I'm confused here, but he described that she presented for non-diabetic care, just for the trimming of nails and carrying out calluses. He does relate that he started to trim the fifth nail unit. He stopped after the confrontation, and he did proceed to continue with the rest of the care. I spoke with the doctor. He denied that a total nail abortion was performed. He related that he did trim the nail, thinking that it was too long. He does believe that he completed the treatment on that course of that day. He denied the allegation of drugs while he was treating the patient. When he had a conversation with the staff and management, he offered to have a drug screen performed, which was, I guess, declined by the Dr. Newman and his management service. I asked him why he felt that the AB was dismissed during the confrontation with management. He did not have an opinion on that. I'll get to medical records and such, but there was a kind of delay in signing of the records, signing off on the records for completion. And his explanation was he was uncertain how the management was going to proceed with the billing as the signing of the record was linked to the billing aspect of that. When I reviewed the records, this patient was seen in the office, I think, 7 or 8 times. This patient was seen previously by Dr. Mullen 2 or 3 times. The progress note on the date of service here on the, let's see, I think 8-9, demonstrates hyaluronic formation was there. Diabetes is documented in the chart notes. There's a letter from the PCP on the initial referral confirming the patient is indeed diabetic. Previous chart notes in June and July are pretty much identical, cut and paste, to the previous provider, which is a separate provider back from March. And during those encounters, there's no previous mention for problematic nail pathology. As I mentioned previously, that there was a delay in signature on multiple encounters. by Dr. Mavid, when they're signing off on the records, it's not just that one, it's multiple, and they're like a week or so after the encounter. There's no previous documentation for NALD agreements in this objective or the evaluations. The date in question, again, there's nothing recorded in this objective for troubling pathology of the nail. She just thought she was presenting for her routine calluses. On that visit of 8-9, there's actually a new entry when compared to previous cut and paste. The document is noted for the hallux nail discoloration, pathology on the right side of the nail units, bilateral side of the nail units, especially on the fifth nose, is noted. The plan for the encounter does document at this point that there was minimal debridement of the fifth nail unit. Notably, more documentation on this encounter than in previous ones mentioned on the previous dates. And again, as I said, the note was signed a week later. In the medical records, it provided there was a note from Dr. Meehan, his medical director, regarding the encounter, and at no point in his note in the chart that was provided to the board, at no time did they believe that Dr. Mullen was under the influence of drugs. And verbally, Dr. Mullen offered to get a test done. No test was deemed necessary at that point. There is a line mentioned by Dr. Neiman that management believed that the removal of the toenail was not warranted, and they addressed it internally with Dr. Mullen. There were some photos that may be submitted to the board. I'm uncertain if this was from the emergency room or thereabouts, but of the appearance of the nail. And clinically, it does seem to be an aggressive proximal debridement of the nail, more than typical diabetic nail trimming from a picture that I looked at. I did look at the financials, and they were appropriate. So the initial allegations conclude here. Dr. Mullen practiced under the influence. I do not unsubstantiate it. There's no real evidence of that happening. I don't think there's enough proof for that. This patient, AB, did present to the clinic for follow-up care. I think I mentioned her eighth time there. She did not report new concerns for her pathology. She was expecting the same previous treatment that she's had with the clinic, multiple different providers. And on that last visit, the treatment plan certainly deviated from prior experience, and that led to her pain or anxiety. Again, as I mentioned, she did go to the emergency room because of this. So I believe that when any patient comes to us as an office, there is a verbal consent for treatment. They're always giving us treatment or permission to treat them to a certain extent. When the patient presents for an appointment, they expect a certain level of care as well. But when they do believe that in this case, this patient, AB, was not expecting a nail debridement, one was performed. When we do routine foot care and trimming of nails, we don't normally get a written consent for that. When you're doing it as a nail holding, there is, but you're getting a nail, a local block. And when you accept that block, that's normally accepting consent too. So I find this to be a gray area. As far as consent for it, if you sit in that chair, you're expecting treatment. Normally, there's a procession when you're coming with an nail clipper. Hey, what are you doing? You're not expecting it. So, I understand both sides of this. The fact that this wasn't her first visit there, she's kind of expecting the same treatment.
And, you know, I noticed in the chart, Dr. Saunders, that the patient had been using Carasil on the nails. So that fungus, even though, I mean, it's like, how long was it really there if she was using something before and then now it's not, yeah, that it wasn't documented till the 9th.
Yeah, I believe that the documentation changed because there was an interaction. Otherwise, it would have been a cut and paste. Mm-hmm. When that changed, obviously, it was written after the appointment. There is a certain level of understanding that when you use some of these office softwares that do the billing for you, mm-hmm. that you have to delay a little bit. And there was a delay in this particular case because, hey, I don't know if we want to bill this as an office, this as a courtesy to this patient because there was an interaction. And that would make sense as to waive that visit. But previous visits were delayed also for Dr. Mullen when he was signing records. So decreases the credibility there a little bit.
Right.
And how much of the note is altered because of this interaction.
Right. I agree. Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr.
Foreman? No. Very complete report.
Thank you. Ms. Broman?
Yes, I do. I guess I have a question because when I saw the pictures, if the pictures were when it happened, she did have nail polish on. It did look to me like a gel polish because it looked kind of thick. And I was just wondering why the doctor, it looked new. I was wondering why the doctor would do that and not say anything to the patient about the nail polish. Strange thing, it's not really medical, it's just courtesy.
I don't know.
And we don't have him here to ask for you to ask that question of.
You'll be amazed at how many patients get their nails done before surgery.
Mm-hmm.
When you go into the OR, they're not perfectly done. I mean, you know, they want to look good. I did look at the picture,
and
the picture of that nail was debrided more than the typical. Now, sometimes it's dry and it cracks, and you know, things happen. I don't believe a total nail lotion was performed, but I think it was more than what anybody was expecting.
I agree with
that. And it caused pain for her.
Yeah. Ms. Johnson-Gray, do you have any questions?
I actually do not. Ms. Broman, she touched on what I was going to touch on about, you know, the toenail and the difference between the two. But other than that, I have no questions. As a nail tech, I think it's just kind of odd. You know, I'm looking at one foot and it looks fine, and then to look at the other toe where that toenail, was completely debrided. So, that was my question. So I have no other questions.
Okay, great. And as I indicated, we don't have the doctor present on the phone call, but we do have the complainant, and her initials again are AB. So I would ask AB just to give a summary of, because we've all read, you know, Dr. Saunders' report and stuff, but with and her and the actual complaint that was in our file in our packet. So I would just ask her to, if she can summarize in within a 5-minute time period, and then if we have questions, we can ask you. So please proceed. Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Could you speak just a little stronger?
Can you hear me now?
I can. Can everybody, if anyone can't hear
I can hear her fine.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, sorry. Yes, I went to my follow-up appointment that day. It was supposed to be just the usual trim down my showers, mainly on the heel of my feet, and to double-check the seated corn that I had in my right foot, at like the top part below the foot. That's all that appointment was supposed to be, nothing more. Going back, started talking to the doctor, if he was getting situated, let me know I went to a concert. He was fine at first. So he sat down on the stool, spun around, digging the drawer, which normally when he would turn around, he would have the scalpel tool that he would use to shave down from the towels first. That's not what he turned around with. So I'm on the table, he turned around with the biggest clipping tool I have seen in person. So I started to move. I moved my foot, my left leg, and I said, no, what are you doing with that? He doesn't say anything to me. He looked glazed over, like he wasn't blinking anymore. No response, and I couldn't move anymore on the table. He's still not answering me. He kind of flicked my foot that was closest to him, which is my left, the pinky toe. Doesn't say anything, and with a swift move, removes my toenail, which causes me to have a panic attack because I'm only there for callus removal and to check that seat of corn. That is it. And that happened. I had a panic attack. So this one was sitting on my chest. I start to hyperventilate and I start crying because I'm panicking. I'm diabetic. The last thing I need is an infection. The next thing was my birthday coming up, and I'm like, I want to wear a dress and heels. I'm like, I can't do that, but forget the dress. I'm worried about getting an infection and losing my foot. And I asked myself, why would you do that? You guys never touch my nails, as in, like, cut them at all, meaning that. He sits there, he goes, I'm confused. Gets quiet, kind of glances over at the chart, and goes, why are you here? I said, I am here to do the follow-up like you always do, which is remove the talus and check to see the corn. That's it. And he goes, I don't know why you're upset. It'll grow back. Then goes in the next breath. They're safe anyway. I said, certainly, you guys mentioned about the polish. Yeah, it was still kind of sunny. When it was still polish, you guys are right about that. I don't get acrylic. That's too dangerous. I won't have to worry about an infection. I don't get acrylic for my toes or my hands at all. I get gel or regular polish only. So it went from, it'll go back to your face anyway. And I'm like, this man has got to be on something. There's no way. This is not a normal visit and communication happening. And I'm crying, trying to get myself together and wrap my mind around what just happened. And it felt like being violated. Because I told him no and asked him what he was doing before he even did that with me and used that tool on me. We did not finish the appointment. I got up, I put my shoe on, the right foot, I left it off, the left one. And I went up to the front desk, crying. And the girl who took me back and to the room to wait on the doctor originally, she said, what's wrong, what happened? I said, I don't know what that man is on. He's got to be on something, because why did he just remove my phone? And she looked at the other girl, she's like, what are you here for? I said, you guys only removed my palate and check to see the corn. You guys never cut my nails at all. She turned to the other girl sitting at the other computer and goes, see, I told you he was on something because he's been acting off lately. So then in my mind, I'm like, if you guys thought he was under the influence or something, you guys didn't report it. This could have been avoided. She ended up going on the computer. She was looking for a phone number for the office manager who was located at another location. And I guess she used the work messenger or whatever they have. I couldn't see it and found the number. I ended up in the hallway crying with the office manager on the phone. He said it wasn't making any sense to him why this would happen if I'm only there for callus removal and to check the sweet corn. That's it. This has been a very traumatic experience, I could say, and I ended up going to urgent care later on that day. The pain was really, really high. Like, I came home trying to elevate my foot and everything and take Tylenol. It was not healthy. So when I went to urgent care, doctor's like, what happened to you? And I told her, she's like, why would that man do that? She's like, I'm going to give you some ointment to help try and prevent any infection. You're going to have to keep it clean, keep it elevated as much as you can, and use this ointment, which is what I did. So, eventually ended up on the phone with the director of the office, which that was not a very encounter. At all. Very combative and talking over me about a set that I requested that the doctor get drug tested, which I don't think is out of the ordinary when someone's behaving like that. And you're there for a completely different type of appointment. It did catch me off guard because that should have never happened. That shouldn't happen to anybody. And the panic that sets in and the fact that I could easily get an infection more so because I'm diabetic. Like, this shouldn't happen to anybody. And it did, unfortunately. And I just, This has been a horrible, horrible situation. I didn't fully enjoy my birthday. I just say that because when I got one right, I'm sick. And I'm going to end up having to lose my foot because someone was careless. I don't understand what that man was thinking that day. That's it.
Okay, well, thank you. That was very concise and easy to follow what happened with you, and we appreciate you bringing that to the attention of the board. Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for the complainant, TB?
Not for the complainant, only the physician, but obviously they're not here to ask.
Right, yes. Ms. Broman?
Same, only for the physician.
Yeah, and Ms. Johnson-Gray?
Sorry, this is Dr. Neiman. The physician will be...
No, you are not the physician on this case, Dr. Pardon me?
I'm just telling you, Dr. Maudlin did not have the email. I forwarded it to him. He should be on the call instead.
Okay, great. That would be perfect. Thank you so much. Okay, Ms. Johnson Gray, I'm sorry, you were saying?
Yes. I just wanted to ask AB, who... Does she normally get her toenails cut by the doctor, or does the nail technician that cares for her feet usually cut her toenails?
Yes, this is Amy. So it's a rare thing that I get my toenails cut whenever I get a pedicure. I'll normally have them file down. It's just preferred, especially when it comes to shaping. So I'm normally having to file the toenails down.
Thank you. That's all I needed. Thanks.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Can you finish answering the question? The question was, do you get them cut by the office, the doctor's office,
by the doctor's office,
or by her nail technician?
Which
one does she normally have? Yes.
It's not the office.
So what I'm hearing is that the complaint says that she has her nails filed when she's at the salon for her pedicure. They just file them and they do the gel. That's her preferred method, that they don't cut her nails, and the doctor's office does not cut her nails.
Correct, yes, ma'am.
Okay, perfect. I have a question, ma'am.
I have Dr. Maudlin.
Thank you, Dr. Maudlin. I will call on you, and Dr. Maudlin, this is Dr. Campbell. I'll call on you in a second. I'm glad you're here. Let me go ahead. I have a question for the complainant, AV. Now, ma'am, it said in your records that you were using Carousel. Were you still using that on your nails for fungus, the over-the-counter product?
The only thing I was using was what Urgent Care gave me. I'm not still currently using it, but I was for the time being after the incident happened.
Okay, but prior to that, were you using any kind of topical antifungal treatment on the toenails?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Any further questions for the complainant before we move to Dr. Maudlin? Okay. Hearing none, I will ask then for Dr. Maudlin to give us his perspective. I don't know how much he just got on the call, so he hasn't heard the report, but I'm sure he has. Did he have the, he had your report to read. So he has read the investigator's report. So we'll go ahead then and ask Dr. Maudlin for his statement. Dr. Maudlin?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry. Did you just want me to add to the report?
Well, just, if you... whatever you heard from the well, you've read the report that Dr. Fonders did. So,
yes.
And I don't know how much you heard of the statement from the complainant, but now it's just time for you to make a statement if there's anything you need to add, and then or things that you feel are important here. Then board members will be given the opportunity to ask you questions before we move into discussion. So.
Yeah, no, I thought the report was pretty thorough. I couldn't think of anything else that was missed.
Okay, so then...
Am I allowed to speak on his permission?
No, Seamus, is that... He's not the complainant, but he was within part of the record?
It's up to the board who they would like to hear from. So if they'd like to hear from Dr. Neiman... regarding factual parts of the case, and that is appropriate, again, it's up to the board.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and give Dr. Neiman just an opportunity, since Dr. Maudlin has said he has nothing to add, and then we will entertain questions from board members. So, Dr. Neiman.
All right, thank you for your time. I know Dr. Maudlin did not share what was said, so for him to make an accurate statement, it's hard.
Yeah.
I know if Dr. Maudlin had a lawyer, he would be able to speak as well. I'm not his lawyer, but I'm very much an advocate on this case for him, as if I am the medical director of the practice. I did speak with the complainant, and she did make some disparaging comments about our discussion. I understand that the patient has some discomfort from a nail trimming that she feels she needs consent to. The point of argument was, did we avulse the nail or did we just cut the nail too short? I wanted to clarify that he did not avulse the nail, he did not remove the nail. She was upset. She did make accusations of Dr. Marlin being on drugs, which we were not going to be in a group having drug tested. She did question our staff and stated that our staff did make some insinuation that they agreed with that statement, which is untrue. We did proceed to not complete the record because myself as well as our executive manager had a call with the patient, I believe, the following Monday. This occurred on a Friday. And then we asked and discussed things. We went from that discussion to Dr. Maudlin, and then we asked him to put a thorough statement within the notes of what he recalled, and then sign the note. Okay? I'm not exactly sure when he signed the note, but the idea that all this happened back-to-back-to-back was pretty much well within about 4 to 5 days, and I believe he signed the note within 6 or 7 days.
Does any board member have any questions for Dr. Neiman? Dr. Foreman?
Can I make one more statement about the,
oh, sure,
the polishing of nails? We cut many people's nails and have polish on the nails. So for that, understanding that because their nails were polished doesn't assume that the patient's not there for nail care. A lot of people will come in and get their nails trimmed, having been polished, and they'll go and get them polished right after. They just don't want the nail tech to trim their nails. And so I would assume that would be understood by most podiatrists.
Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Neiman?
No, I have a question for Dr. Maudlin, though.
Okay, just a second.
Sure.
Okay, go ahead, please, then, because we've got both gentlemen on the line.
Why did you just trim the nail?
When we came in, because I was familiar with the patient, so when we came in, we were just talking about her weekend and what she was doing, and I just put over and got the nippers, and we were still talking, and I cut the nail, and then she had told me that she didn't have me do the nail, so I apologized, and I finished doing all her calluses. And
was the nail loose?
No, it wasn't.
Okay, that's all the questions I have.
Okay. Ms. Grohman, do you have any questions for Dr. Maudlin?
Dr. Berman, have you ever trimmed her nail before? You've seen her before, has she? Have you ever trimmed your nail before?
When I went back to the chart, I saw that I had not. But when I go through the charts in the morning, I had just assumed since it was for foot care.
So when you got the clippers out or whatever you used, did the patient react to them? Did she say, why do you have that? What are you doing? Did she move her foot?
I didn't move the foot, but after she told me that I didn't cut her nail, I apologized, put it down. There was no bleeding, nothing. Nothing to wrap.
So while you were cutting, she was not saying anything to you?
We were just talking about her weekend. She had been to a concert, completely off the topic.
While you took out the clippers and you were going and clipping her nail, you were just casually talking while you were holding her foot and clipping her nail? And there was no reaction whatsoever from the patient.
Afterwards, yeah, but I couldn't get her to talk to me. I couldn't even, it took me a while to even figure out what was wrong. I asked her if she wanted me to stop. I could have referred her, you know, to anybody else within our practice or another practice. Nothing was intentional.
Thank you.
Ms. Johnson-Gray?
My question is for Dr. Maudlin. Did you check her chart right before you saw her to see
the
service was?
Yes, but I usually first thing in the morning I check for the whole day. Just so I'm not missing anything, make sure we cover everything that needs to be covered.
So, but you didn't check her chart independently before you went into the room to service her?
I did. I don't know how soon before I saw her, though. I usually do it first thing in the morning so everything's fresh with everybody.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any other questions for the doctor? Okay. So
this is Berman. I've got one more question.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Usually when you're sitting in the chair and the doctor does something, they usually, in my opinion, and Dr. Maudlin, understand I am a lay person, not a doctor. So when a doctor comes over, they say, I'm going to do this, and that's when they do it, or I'm going to do this. And did at any time, did you take out the clippers and say, I'm going to cut your toenail? Or versus, I'm going to work on your palate?
No, I didn't verbalize it.
Just came
out. When they come in, we get them in the chair, situated, get everything, feel for pulses, all the general real quick thing.
So you didn't say, gee, you know, looks a little longer than a clip
it? I didn't say it, but they did look long to me.
When you start doing her calluses, do you say anything about them? Start doing your callus?
No, because I've seen her enough that, you know, you get into a routine with people.
I understand what you're saying, routine, but the cutting of the toenail was never in the routine. So this was somewhat different. So you were going out of the routine, but you did not mention to the patient you were going out of the routine?
No.
Thank you.
Dr. Maudlin, this is Dr. Campbell. Why Why was the only documentation of nail fungus at that visit of 8-9 and not previous?
I don't know. I guess we don't always, you know, mention the oral antifungals or topical antifungals. A lot of people don't try them, or a lot of times they don't even work. So.
All right. So time now, board members, for discussion here. I think we can say that obviously there, Dr. Saunders indicated there were some delays in signing off on chart notes, and we did receive an explanation that there was waiting to see about how billing wanted to proceed. There's obviously some documentation issues regarding nail pathology and the fact that there's nothing in the chart notes that specifies that the nails were painful to the patient. Also, there's issues here with the normal expectancy of care for this patient personally here, that she was, just in there to have calluses and the seed corns debrided. So the determination needs to be, is this, something that you feel maybe a letter of concern or non-disciplinary CMEs regarding, documentation and performing a procedure or debriding nails on something where the patient did not have complaints of pain documented in the chart. So those are just kind of the options here. You have to make sure, of course, if you feel there's a violation of state statutes, then that needs to be discussed. So, again, levels of remember and go back to the levels of what we have as far as action against doctors versus two, what we see having occurred in this case. So I'd like to open this up for discussion and to hear your opinions. Dr. Foreman?
I think Dr. Maitland was just going through the routine that we all go through and just picked up the nail clippers. I don't think he meant any malice by doing it. When you start getting into a conversation, you just go into automatic robot mode, which I think he was probably in. As for the other question before, no, we don't always say we're going to trim your nails or we're going to trim your calluses, because we've seen the patients and they do know what to expect. I think it was a mistake, but I don't think it was under malice or anything caused him.
Yeah. Excuse me, this is Casey. I don't know if I'm allowed to say something.
No, not at this point, ma'am. We're in the discussion, so I'm sorry. We, we're at this point of the adjudication of the case. So, and you gave us, I think, a very wonderful, a good summary. So if my board members had had any other questions for you, they would have asked. So we'll just proceed with the discussion. Ms. Broman?
Because this was not anything that had been done in the past, because she had nail polish on, which to me, it would be next to impossible to see if there was any fungus if you have nail polish. I understand the nail does come up a little bit with fungus, but from the picture, and again, I'm not a doctor, everything looked the same. So if that little nail you felt had fungus, then all the rest of them, it would have looked different than the rest of them, but to me it didn't, which again, I'm not a doctor. I believe that, and even Dr. Neiman believes that the removal of the nail was not warranted. So I'm going to say that it's on the report here, Dr. Neiman. It's on the investigator's report. There's a note from Dr. Neiman, medical director, regarding the encounter. At no time did they believe Dr. Modlin was under the influence of drugs. Dr. Neiman believed that the removal of the nail was not warranted and addressed it with Dr. Modlin.
That is in the report.
Sorry, who stated that? That's what Dr. Saunders said from sheer...
Okay, listen, board members are in discussion. This is not a time to have discussion with the complainant or members of the public. So if you want to rescind your motion and have more discussion, if you want to jump back into discussion, that's fine. Discussion with the whole group and the public, that's fine. otherwise, you just continue down this path with your motion.
Yeah, this is just discussion for board members at this time, as I have not heard from all my board members. Ms. Broman, did you have where you had more to continue with there?
I am not sure what the options are for the level of action, but I believe an action is necessary.
Well, I had given two options, what's called the letter of concern, that's non-disciplinary, and that just kind of alerts the physician as to these are things that we're concerned about, but it doesn't move to the level of, a disciplinary action, but it's just something that the clinician should be aware of and make changes to how they do things in some instances. Or the other is ordering a non-disciplinary continuing medical education that's on top of our yearly 25 hours.
Okay. Those two, I would say, definitely a letter of concern and a discussion. Changing the way they do it, either telling the person what they're going to do ahead of time, or something, and not just going into robot mode, because I think that creates problems in a doctor's office. And again, I'm speaking as a non-physician.
Right. Ms. Johnson Gray, do you have any?
I do.
Yes, ma'am.
I wanted to express that I am concerned about the lack of review of the patient's chart immediately prior to seeing that patient. Dr. Motley said that he reviews everyone's chart at the same time at the top of the morning, but so many changes can occur in schedule, cancellations of patients, and everything. So, as a licensed nail technician, I always would have medical information of my clients. So, like, if I had a client that was diabetic and I knew that was a person, I was not going to clip their nails. So I am concerned about that. And I am also concerned about the lack of restatement of the services being performed with the patient prior to performing those services. A patient should always know what is happening. Even if it is procedural or it's something that you do every time you see that patient, there should still be a restatement of what is happening, because what may come out of that conversation is knowledge that could bring forth new information that may change the procedure that a doctor is about to perform. So those are the two statements that I wanted to mention, and I am in agreement with my cohort member about, at minimum, issuing a letter of concern. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Ms. Broman, would you like to offer components to a letter of concern in the form of a motion?
I'm not exactly sure how to say it, though. No, I believe that what happened should have never happened. I agree with what was stated, that you should review, especially when you're dealing with somebody who's diabetic. How you would say it, I don't know, Dr. Campbell.
Okay. Well, we can form this together here as a board, okay? So I'll go ahead. I'll make a motion to issue a letter of concern to Dr. Modlin. As the board has concerns regarding the following, or in the review of the patient's chart prior to actual treatment time with the patient, and including the issue also of debriding nails that were not documented as painful.
We've got an issue with documentation and when it happened, but we have an issue with not telling a patient what they're about to do.
Okay, that's another thing. Okay, so that's our third component then. So we have the first issue. Would you review what you have taken down as notes, Heather, so we're all on the same page?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. So what I have is that the board is going to issue a non-disciplinary letter of concern for not reviewing AB's chart prior to the appointment for lack of communication regarding the toe nail trim performed and for the delay in documentation of the patient's chart.
And also I would, in the proper, you know, the fact that there was no subjective documentation as to the nails being painful that would cause someone to debride a nail. Is that how
it is? Pain is not the one reason why we trim nails.
Dr. Neiman, we're in discussion. We've heard from, you know, all parties. This is the section we're in right now. So Ms. Broman and Ms. Johnson Gray and Dr. Foreman, are all those components in agreement?
That we would like to add that the doctor would discuss what they're going to do prior to actually doing it. So if they're going to cut the nail, they're going to say, your nail looks a little long, we're going to go ahead and cut. Or we're going to start on the callus, we're going to start on the whatever is the problem. They're going to say it before they grab the foot and do it.
So, communication.
Communication doesn't, sounds like it's an issue in this office here.
Yeah, the communication of what's going to be. Yeah. Okay, so Heather, could you please review those one more time for the board members so that they can be ready to vote on, or well, then we'll make, once we have the components, then we'll need a second before we vote.
Yes, Madam Chair, board members. So I have a non-disciplinary letter of concern for not reviewing AB's chart prior to the appointment for lack of communication regarding the debridement of the toenail, for the delay in documenting the chart, and for not documenting whether there was pain, I believe is whether the toe
was
painful.
Yeah, the pain. Yeah, because that was not. Yeah, pain. Because the issue was if he treated an area that wasn't painful, and if there was no documentation that the nails were painful in the chart. So making sure his documentation is clear.
So the motion can be for lack of communication regarding the debridement of the toe nail. While the toenail was not painful, while there was no documentation that the toenail was painful.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I apologize. This is AAG Monica. I'm not sure you need to get that granular with it, considering it's a letter of concern.
Okay.
Possibly documentation failed to support the treatment provided.
Okay. That's good. Okay, so is everybody clear?
There's also communication between the patient and the doctor is my concern.
Right, so we don't say I'm sorry to pop over you.
Please, no, not Broman.
I was going to say that was one of the things I stated. I said there was no restatement of the services being performed with the patient prior to the doctor performing those services. That I didn't hear that recall in the letter.
Ms. Johnson-Gray, can you repeat that so Heather, she's over here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The lack of restatement of services being performed to the patient immediately, or to say prior to immediate performance of services.
So, again, Heather, what do you have?
Madam Chair, board members, in my notes, I went with Mr. Monahan's wording and just said for lack of communication regarding the treatment provided. I do still have noted that there, that Dr. Maudlin did not review AB's chart prior to the appointment.
Okay. Well, that should cover that, right? Okay.
So, doctor-patient communication prior to procedure?
Yeah, that's how the AG Monahan recommended to, because we, on a letter of concern, we're not, really extrapolating on details because the doctor is here present during the conversation. He's hearing what we're saying, so that should be sufficient for detail for them. This document is just to indicate what the major concerns of the board were or are. Does that make sense?
It makes sense that we don't say nail cutting or something like that, but it doesn't make sense that we don't say doctor-patient, discussion of what will be performed prior to doing the procedure. Something like that. So I don't want to say nail treatment or callus removal or anything like that, but the patient-doctor communication, I think, is what was lacking, and I didn't hear that.
Okay, well, what did you say?
Just that I'm the
concern of lack of communication between the doctor and the patient.
On procedures.
Yeah. Well, on anything. Communication is important in any place. So.
Yeah, but they were again, the doctor mentioned that this patient has been seen before. They know each other. They're talking about the weekend. They're talking about whatever. So that's it. They do have post communication, but not about the specific procedure that he's going to do or she's going to do. That's all. It's not the communication per se. It's about the procedure about to be done. So if they're going to do the callus, whatever they're going to do, but they have to define to the patient what they're going to do before they do it.
This is the AG Monahan. I think that's very clear now. I think if the board is comfortable with the discussion here, the motion can include that, and we and Heather can work that in there.
Super, thank you.
Okay, so is everybody set? We need a second on the motion.
I second.
Thank you, Ms.
Board Member Johnson Gray.
Thank you so much. Okay, been moved and seconded to offer the LOC. Does anybody want to hear the full thing again as far as what the components of the LOC are? If we're satisfied with that, any other discussion then? I don't hear anybody having any concerns to hear again. So, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Thank you, Dr. Sponge. All righty. The next case on the investigation files is complaint number 2414-C, Tasha Klotzbach, Larios, DPM. The doctor is not present. This is a complaint from outside sources from Blue Cross of California. You did see in your file, your board packet, the response from the physician. We do have two, the complainants are on the phone from Blue Cross. Their initials are J, M, and A, I. Are you both still on the phone?
Good morning, yes. This is A, N.
Oh, is it N? A-I. I'm sorry.
N is a name, yes, ma'am.
Okay, and then
yes, it's... Yes, we're still here.
Okay, great. Okay, so do you want to make any opening summaries, Heather, as to what this is about, or should we just go ahead and...
Madam Chair, board members, I can provide a brief summary. I received this information from Blue Shield, and it's regarding Dr. Klotzbach Larios potentially misrepresenting her credentials and misrepresenting different names that she may be using. There's also allegations of writing prescriptions inappropriately and you do have Dr. Klotzbach Larios' response to the allegations. Dr. Klotzbach Larios did indicate that she would not be able to be present at this meeting either in person or telephonically due to health issues that she's undergoing right now. So I can answer any questions, but that's the you know, basic summary of the allegations.
Thank you, Heather. Okay, so let's go ahead then, since we'll ask for a summary.
Can I interrupt for just...
Oh, yeah.
Can I interrupt for just a moment? I'm sorry. Can we take this into another room for a moment?
That
I have a question.
Oh, you would like to move to executive session for purposes of legal advice?
Yes.
Okay. Do I do I have a second?
A second.
Thank you. It's moved and seconded.
Ms. Johnson-Gray.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson-Gray. It has been moved and seconded to move into executive session for purposes of receiving legal advice. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Okay, so to our complainants on the phone, you can stay on the line. We have to move into another room to have our executive session, and we will be back. Heather, do you want them to call back in or stay on the line?
Yeah, if you don't mind, that would probably make the most sense. And then I'm just gonna mute the phone while we're in executive session. So as soon as we come back, I'll unmute and let you know when we're back.
Okay, that sounds good. We'll be on standby. Thank you.